Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And this evening we have with us Mr. William H. Kennedy, and we're going to be talking about an article that he wrote recently, appeared on the Internet. It was called Satanism, Threat in the New Millennium. William, thank you so very much for being with us.
Be here, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
And we've had Mr. Kennedy on in the past discussing other issues, but I saw this article, and I thought this was well worthwhile discussing, because, of course, it is our contention that the major battle we face today is not a political battle or an ideological battle or a cultural battle. It is a spiritual battle that is being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And there really are satanic forces that are alive and well in the world today. It's very difficult to understand anything going on. It's very difficult to understand why a Christian administration would reward the Attorney General, his name was William Pryor, who destroyed the career of Judge Roy Moore, the Ten Commandment judge, that this man who was standing up for Christian values and Christian principles, his position as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, was destroyed by a man named William Pryor, who was rewarded by our Christian administration by giving it an interim appointment to the federal judgeship. Now, why would a Christian administration reward a man who destroyed the career of a Christian judge? Well, we have to ask that. We'd have to ask why a Christian administration would take us into a war in the Middle East, supposedly because, well, we had information that they had weapons of mass destruction. But the CIA insisted they didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. It was just that the Christian administration got some people to give faulty information, knowing full well it was faulty, and got us into the war. And now people are dying. Iraqis are dying. Americans are dying. And instead of saying, well, we made a mistake going in, now let's get out and let's just divide the country into three parts. Let each area have its own government. Oh, no, we're going to keep the country united. We're going, of course, to stay there. And we're going to let the people have their democracy. We want to democratize all of the Middle East. But ladies and gentlemen, they have almost a 1,400-year history of the Muslim faith, which, of course, is a theocracy. They don't want a democracy, at least most of them don't want a democracy. I'm sure there are a few who would like to be free, but you have your fanatic supporters of Islam over there. If we are going to democratize the entire Middle East, we're going to lose 1 million men in the process of doing that. But don't worry, they're actually out recruiting people all throughout the world today. In fact, I was reading an article out of Costa Rica where they're down there recruiting people for the secret army. And, of course, these are what they call contract workers. Hundreds of them have already died. Many are retired SEALs or special forces, or that's part of the CIA war. There's a secret war being fought over there by the CIA, and then, of course, all you ever hear about are military. But all of these things are going on, and they really don't make any sense unless you understand we're moving towards World War III. And why would anybody want World War III after losing 21 million people in World War I and 50 million people in World War II? Why would we be moving towards World War III unless there is a force out there that wants as much death and destruction as possible? I believe that there is such a force in the world. I believe it's the force of Satan. And well, we're going to talk about Satanism as it exists in the world during the 20th century with Mr. William Kennedy in just a moment. Well, William, why don't you tell us the background of how you got interested in this study?
Well, the name of the article, again, is Satanism, Threat in the New Millennium, and it's online for free at www.williamhkennedy.com. It was a chapter of a book I am writing called Satanic Crime Threaten the New Millennium, and this was the first introductory chapter, and I showed it to some friends and some mentors of mine, and they more or less insisted that I put it online for free because they found it very informative.
No, I found it very informative too, and I appreciate so much your sending me a copy of this. So let's get a little bit into the background of what you've uncovered as you begin looking into Satanism, because that sounds like something that comes out of the X-Files, that there really are satanic organizations out there, aren't there?
Sure there are. What my article will give you, which you, again you can get at williamhkennedy.com, is a thumbnail sketch of the major figures and trends that formed the phenomenon of modern Satanism. Now, you can trace a lot of this down to a fellow named Aleister Crowley, who I call the godfather of modern Satanism. He lived between 1875 and 1947, and he's a nexus for a lot of what is now Satanism in the world.
And I certainly think that Mr. Crowley is really was the man who inspired Timothy Leary, and I believe that Alfred Kinsey was a Crowleyite, and I believe that, of course, Anger was a Crowleyite. I believe that Harry Hay was a Crowleyite.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so when you begin to understand that Crowley actually inspired many of the people who are responsible for these terrible, terrible things. I mean, Kinsey changed the moral structure of our society. Of course, he was financed by the Rockefeller Foundation that knew exactly what he was doing, and I believe is a tremendous force behind this whole world satanic movement. I believe there's a lot of money that goes into this. Certainly, Timothy Leary had strong ties to the CIA. And so you begin to see, of course, this power structure behind the modern-day satanic movement. You pick up the story, though.
Okay, well, just basically, when you look at these figures who started Satanism, like Crowley, you find out that they're actually very despicable characters. Now, Crowley started out, he was the son of a wealthy brewer and pub chain owner in England, and he was brought up in a very strict puritanical Christian sect called the Plymouth Brethren. He went to Cambridge University, but he did not graduate. At Cambridge, he became more or less obsessed.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William Kennedy. He's talking about an article that he's put up on the Internet, which is available, and we'll get to the website here a little later. It's simply williamkennedy.com. But this is the first chapter of a book he's writing on modern-day Satanism. And he started out talking about Aleister Crowley, who was born in 1875 and died, what was it, 1947. Go ahead.
Well, what Crowley did is he began a lifelong obsession with ritual magic. And what he did in these, he formed his own system of sex magic. And what sex magic is it's a combination of ritual, sexual contact, drugs, visualization, and just basically a black mass, so to speak. Now, what advocates say is during these sex magic rituals, they become the god or deity that they visualize or focus on, and in the frenzy of the sexual contact, they actually become this god they're focusing on. Now, Aleister Crowley did this very early on, and he identified himself as Jesus Christ as a young man. As he went along, he joined different fraternal organizations like the Freemasons, the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, but he went a bit beyond that. He called his religion Crowleyanity, as an inversion of Christianity. And the one thing you have to remember about all Satanism is the concept of inversion. In other words, it seeks to replace the Christian God with something else. And that was Crowley's ultimate concern his entire life. He even wrote a letter to the Communist Central Committee in Moscow asking if he could be the minister for propaganda against Christianity, their atheistic propaganda minister, which they never got back to him. Crowley really didn't care that the communists didn't have any metaphysical system. He was more attracted by their stated claim that they would overthrow Christianity.
And basically he hated Christianity, wasn't that funny?
Yeah.
But the major driving force behind Aleister Crowley was his hatred of Christianity. Now, what about the OTO? You mentioned the Golden Dawn, his association with Masonry, but what about the OTO?
The OTO is a group called the Ordo Templi Orientis, and it was founded by a fellow named Theodor Royce in Germany, who eventually went and met Crowley. Now, what the OTO does, that's what they call it for short, is they are a sex ritual group as well. Crowley eventually became the head of the OTO, and he started branches in the United States, in California in particular, up in Berkeley and down in Pasadena. And it's really interesting, the spin-offs from the OTO. In Southern California, in Pasadena, the fellow who ran the OTO lodge there was a fellow named Jack Parsons. And what Jack Parsons did is, he was a rocketry designer. He invented solid rocket fuel, which powers our space program today. And his associate, or a fellow who he initiated into the OTO, was none other than L. Ron Hubbard, who was the founder of Dianetics and Scientology. L. Ron Hubbard started out as an OTO sex magician.
But of course, Scientology is a very, very powerful religion today, has many, many followers, very, very many prominent people are Scientologists.
Well, it's very interesting because that is a definite Crowley spinoff. The cross that they use in the Church of Scientology is based on the cross that Crowley designed for his group, and the official photograph of L. Ron Hubbard is based on Aleister Crowley's official photograph.
And they're still active. I know one of my friends recently got mixed up with him, thinking he was going to get all sorts of advice, and began to be more efficient in his work and his life. And, you know, I don't know how much money they took him for, but we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars.
Sure.
Within the last year or two.
Oh, yeah, they get a lot of people offering these courses. The other group that's interesting that is an OTO spinoff that most people don't realize is the Rosicrucian group, which was started by H. Spencer Lewis, which is headquartered in San Jose, California.
That's been around for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yes, but they got their original charter from Theodore Royce. That is an OTO spinoff group. And what the Rosicrucians in San Jose are, it's just merely the OTO sex rituals, which are toned down so, you know, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Taxpayer can do these sorts of things, but without any actual sexual contact. It's the same rituals, just without the relation.
Yes, of course, there are other Rosicrucian groups. There have been Rosicrucians here in this country in one form or another, going back many hundreds of years.
Certainly, but the most globally expansive is AMARC, run by H. Spencer Lewis, and that is a direct spin-off of the OTO sex ritual.
And dating back about how long? Are we talking about 50 years or so?
Oh, a little more than that. I believe he founded it in 1932.
Okay, so we'd be pretty talking about well over 70 years.
Right, well over 70 years. And it's still a direct OTO spin-off, though. That's what people don't realize. They advertise a lot in mainstream magazines and such. What you're just getting is when you subscribe to that religion is watered-down sex rituals. Now, Crowley, it's very interesting. Another OTO member was Gerald Gardner, and Gerald Gardner was the founder of the modern witchcraft movement, which Gerald Gardner hired Aleister Crowley to design all of the rituals which are practiced by people in the Wicca religion today. They don't even know it, but they are they think they're practicing ancient goddess rites when they're just practicing the rites of Aleister Crowley, who referred to himself as the Great Beast 666.
Now, of course, witchcraft has been around, going back to biblical times. What you're suggesting, though, that is modern-day witchcraft is really a sort of a spin-off of the OTO. In other words, it's a different form of witchcraft. It's not really the ancient witchcraft. It's simply a modern version of witchcraft that
right.
can directly be tied to our good old friend Alistair.
Now, Crowley, as I say, he's the godfather of modern Satanism, and like any godfather, there was certainly organized crime before any particular godfather came along, but certain godfathers define things like John Gotti, people like that, and that's what you really see with Crowley. That's the analogy I use. He is the central figure of most modern Satanism and most modern witchcraft, which people who practice these things don't even realize. Now, what Crowley did is in the 1920s, he founded an abbey in Sicily, and he performed these sex magic rituals there with a group of followers, and he got into harder drugs there, cocaine and heroin primarily. Now, he would perform these sex rituals, and he would allow children, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, to witness these explicit sex rituals. So there's no evidence that Crowley himself ever sexually abused a child, but he did mistreat them in the sense that he let them watch these, you know, horribly explicit sex rituals, which involved, you know, sex with animals, bestiality.
But now this is what about in the
1920s.
But of course, one of the reasons that they shut down his abbey there in Sicily, you know, was at least there were rumors about child sacrifice.
Well, the real reason they closed it down was one of his followers, Raoul Loveday, died of toxic shock after he ingested cat's blood from a sacrificed cat. He drank the blood of it out of a silver chalice during one of these sex rituals, and a couple days later he basically died of blood poisoning, and a doctor was called and such. Now, this man's wife, Betty Loveday, her entire life insisted that Crowley deliberately murdered her husband in a human sacrifice. The Italian authorities found out about this, and they expelled Crowley from Sicily, and that commune he set up there just fell apart. He traveled around a bit. He visited America, and he wound up back in England, where during World War II he allegedly worked for British intelligence with different sorts of things on mind control and astrology and such.
Well, I think that what most people don't understand is there really is an element within both the British and the American government that's always wanted to tap into the dark side, because here is where the power is. Here's where, of course, you can accomplish great and wonderful things. Of course, you're playing with real fire when you get involved in that sort of thing. But we know that the CIA here and military intelligence have tried to tap into the dark side.
Oh, certainly, through a variety of means. You know, the Secret Service, the statistic I heard is they spend $1,500,000 a year to make sure that the president isn't affected by subliminal suggestions or other metaphysical means, is the term they use, which is basically psychic attacks. So our government, our security services, take all of this very, very seriously.
And, of course, we know that Adolf Hitler himself was deeply involved with the occult. In fact, Himmler was sort of a prototype for some of the Satanists, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was. Well, that's where, as far as Crowley is concerned, his relationship with fascism is a bit complex, which we can get back to after the break.
All right. Well, I think that it's so important we understand who some of these people were, because they had a profound impact, not only on the society of their time, but about what is going on in the world today. We have a wonderful video. It's available in video or DVD. It's called Deceived. It's a fictionalized story of how the government taps into the supernatural. It stars Lou Gossett Jr. A great story, if you'd like, a fascinating evening with a wonderful Christian message, but a realization that we truly are involved in a spiritual battle. Let me suggest a video. It's called Deceived, available in video or, of course, in DVD format. And I think you need to understand really the enemy we're up against. Beautifully shown in this presentation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is William Kennedy, And, of course, we're talking about the Crowleyite movement as it existed, and Crowley died in 1947, but his disciples live on today. And, of course, there is a network of occult organizations. They work within Masonry, they work within Skull and Bones. The OTO still exists today, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The Ordo Templi Orientis is broken up into about four or five different factions. And it's very sad because some of them have even gotten violent and burnt each other's house down. And so they all vie to be the number one, you know, OTO group. Now, I should say something. What you see with Aleister Crowley that you see in all later Satanism is really three things. They try and replace God with three things. Either they replace God with Lucifer and worship the devil directly, or they replace God with themselves. They have a form of self-worship, or they replace God with, you know, anything they can pull together.
In other words, what you're saying is that some Satanists really don't believe in Satan. They believe this is sort of a spirit, but they don't believe he's a real entity, and this is really a form of self-worship.
Right, but you have to keep in mind that within the context of Christianity, These different sorts of Satanists don't get along with each other. But that's really of no concern to us because, you know, hell is a place full of Satanists who don't agree with each other and have different views of Satanism. So that really, how Satanists define themselves is actually secondary.
Well, you know, the average individual listening to this, they say, well these are a bunch of kooks. They don't affect me and what's going on in the world today. How does this affect the average individual today living, you know, here in the United States? How do these esoteric concepts that existed, you know, 50 years or so ago, what's their impact on the real world of today?
Well, when you see, for one thing, a lot of these people in these Satanist groups actually get into serial killing and murdering. I'll give you an example. In Norway, they've banned Anton LaVey's Satanic Bible because there was a whole series of church burnings which occurred in the early 1990s by black metal Satanists. They damaged over 50 churches. In Latin America, down in Santiago, Chile, just this summer, a Catholic priest was murdered by a Satanist. He was coming off the altar after saying Mass in the cathedral, and he got decapitated by a Satanist. Over in Italy, just this summer 2004, another black metal group murdered a girl in a ritual and said she was a embodiment of the Virgin Mary. So it is a direct assault against society on the whole when you see these murders. And then you have certainly people like Richard Ramirez, who was the Night Stalker. So there's been a lot of deaths caused by people who are mostly spin-offs from these major satanic organizations.
And of course that would include David Berkowitz, who at least claims that he was part of one of the satanic organizations,
the Process Church of the Final Judgment,
as was Charles Manson, at least according to Maury Torrey in his book The Ultimate Evil. We're going to be back in just a moment, but I want to talk really about how this is so applicable today.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest today is William H. Kennedy. We're talking about an essay he has up on the website at williamkennedy.com.
WilliamHKennedy.com. Okay, if they go to williamkennedy.com, they'll get the novelist.
All right, fine.
It's a different person altogether, William H. Kennedy.
All right, okay. WilliamHKennedy.com. But I think that you cannot understand the Nazi movement unless you understand it was founded in the occult. Certainly Himmler was deeply involved.
Oh, sure. We could get back to that. Heinrich Himmler had a castle called Wellersburg Castle, which was in western Germany. And this was the occult headquarters of the SS, where, you know, they used to perform all sorts of dark rituals to Lucifer. And at one point they even decapitated five people and tried to get the heads to speak through magical incantations. So the Third Reich was rooted in occultism and Satanism.
And I really think that's what most people have totally missed. You cannot understand the Nazi movement. You cannot understand the Holocaust. You cannot understand the fact that in addition to the 6 million Jews they killed, there were 12 million others who were slaughtered in the concentration camps. And this was really a bloodlust. Now, everybody's heard of the 6 million Jews, but why do we never hear about the 12 million others? Well, because they were primarily Christians. And, of course, there was an intense hatred of Christianity by this occult movement. And the entire SS movement itself was founded in the occult. These were occultists. They wear the caps with the skull and bones on them. And, the leaders of the SS would meet at this castle as the Knights of the Round Table. I think there were 12 of them. And everything went back to these mystical beliefs. They were actually sending out archaeological groups looking for the Holy Grail. They actually got the spear of Longissimus, the spear that supposedly had pierced the side of Jesus Christ, which was in Vienna. They brought it to Berlin because it was going to have all sorts of special magical power. And you cannot understand how Hitler was able to stand, you know, and speak for 4 or more hours and hold the entire crowd, literally tens of thousands of people transfixed just with the power of his presence, unless you understand, I believe he tapped into the dark side. What do you think?
Definitely so. Hitler himself was obsessed with the occult his entire life. He based a lot of National Socialism on a group called the Thule Society, which was a German occult order. The Third Reich, a vast majority of their rituals, both state rituals and private rituals, were occult in nature. It was sort of a very popular pagan mysticism. And then you had inner core groups like Hitler's SS that just outright practiced black magic.
And certainly wasn't one of the high priests of this whole thing, a man named Heinrich Himmler?
Yes, he was the high priest of the SS.
And when I was reading a story about them, of course, all the SS officers or soldiers, they all had rings, and they were told these rings had magical properties. Now, we have something very, very similar today with the American Special Forces, and if you go into the background of the Special Forces and compare them with the SS, they have a ring. There's a wonderful book called Hunting Bin Laden, goes into the background of Special Forces in Afghanistan, and there was a ring. There was only one of them. It would be passed from unit to unit, but that magical ring would, of course, had magical power that would, of course, protect the American SS forces from the enemy. And, you know, as you read about their belief system, and then you read about the SS, you begin to see a very stark similarity. Men totally dedicated to an objective and goal and cause, really believing they're fighting for God, but what God are they fighting for? They are trained killers. They're trained to do their job. They do it very, very well. They're very efficient, and many of them, I'm sure, believe that they're fighting for their country, but then so do the SS. But, of course, what country are they fighting for, and what is the energizing force behind their belief? So, you know, I believe that we can't really understand what's going on today unless we see the similarities between what happened in the 1930s and 40s and what's going on in the world today. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, William Kennedy. And we're going to be talking more about Crowley, about the well-known Satanists of that era. But, of course, these are not simply kooks. These men played a profound impact on many, many people. Certainly they had very many, very many very wealthy sponsors. And, of course, maybe we'll talk a little bit about Anton LaVey and, of course, the very wealthy people who helped to finance him. Why did wealthy people finance Crowley and LaVey? Why they wanted to tap in to the power, the very real power of the dark side. But I caution you, never consider doing that yourself, for you're really tempting the dark forces. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is William Kennedy. Why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Okay, well, as I was saying about Crowley earlier, it's really hard to say what his relationship with fascism was, because he certainly wasn't one to follow any leader of any kind. He only tended to follow himself. However, he did claim at one juncture that a book of quotes called Hitler Speaks was synonymous with the program for world domination he had in his one of his more famous books called The Book of the Law. So in that sense, he identified his system with fascism. Now, one of his major German followers, Martha Kunzel, saw the Third Reich as a fulfillment of Crowlanity, and she became a very fanatic Nazi herself.
And I think what the Nazis wanted was a new order, a new world order, in essence. In fact, have you ever seen that wonderful movie, The Sound of Music? And, you know, you see the Nazi come up to this ball that the Captain von Trapp is putting on, and the Nazi says to him, well, you know, Captain, you will, of course, be supporting the new order. That's what it's all about. That's what they...
Oh, sure. It's about global domination and control. There's no two ways about it.
That's, of course, the significance of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill.
Sure.
The pyramid and the all-seeing eye, and then the caption beneath, Novo Ordo Seclorum. It's all the same thing. That was what the Nazis wanted. That's what the communists wanted. That is what the Masons want. That is, of course, what the Skull and Bones, what Crowley wanted. They all want the same thing.
Sure. Now, what happened to Crowley is after the war, he died in 1947. He was destitute, and he was pretty much a heroin addict. Now, after he passed away in 47, right about that time, a fellow named Howard Levy, who later went on to change his name to Anton Zandor LaVey, was a San Franciscan who was born in 1930 in Illinois. Then his family moved out to California. He started corresponding with Jack Parsons, who was Crowley's OTO chief in Pasadena. Now, Jack Parsons died in an explosion in 1947, so Howard Levy, later on Anton LaVey, joined the Berkeley branch of the OTO. And this was in 1951. He became a fully initiated member of the OTO.
And the OTO is a satanic organization, isn't it?
A satanic organization which has homosexual contact within several of its rituals.
Hold that thought for just a moment here when we bring on our station. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy. And, of course, we were talking about Crowley dying in 1947. And then, not too long after that, a man named Howard Levy begins to appear. And Howard Levy, you know, starts out, you know, he's a pimp. He's into all sorts of dishonest things associated with the gangster units in San Francisco. And then, of course, he associates with Jack Parsons, who was, of course, working right along with these various satanic groups. And then Parsons died, so Howard Levy joins the OTO chapter in the Berkeley area, in the Bay Area, and changes his name to...
Well, that wasn't for a little while. Please.
Okay, you go ahead, pick up the story.
Okay, what happened is, in 1951, Levy became a full member, and he became friends with a fellow named Kenneth Anger, who was a child actor who later went off on to pen a really great book called Hollywood Babylon, which everyone should take a look at. But Anton LaVey, who was named Howard Levy at that time, he and Kenneth Anger went on a 10-year intense study of occult topics, including, you know, vampires, Satanism, astrology, psychic phenomenon, different forms of divination. So Howard Levy was very knowledgeable in the occult sciences and practices. In 1961, he started to hold meetings at his house and charge an entry fee, and he and Anger would give talks on occult topics, like, I say, astrology or what have you. That eventually evolved in 1966. Howard Levy shaved his head and formed the Church of Satan along with Kenneth Anger and declared himself the Black Pope. Now, he went very forward with the promotion of the Church of Satan, and what Howard Levy or Anton Zandor LaVey did on the side was, it's hard to tell what he did as a young man for work because he lied a lot about his background, but it is clear that he was a keyboard player in various burlesque houses around the Bay Area. As you said, he had an uncle who was one of Al Capone's henchmen, which gave him an in with the nightclub owners in the Bay Area. And after California changed its laws in the 1960s, the burlesque houses went to topless and fully nude dancing in the 60s. And what Anton LaVey did is he recruited young women to perform in these strip shows. And he combined his religion, which was Satanism, with running these strip shows, and he formed what he called the Witches' Review, which was a strip show which he charged an admission to, but when people paid their admission, that was considered a donation to the Church of Satan, which he didn't have to pay taxes on, which is quite interesting. Now, one of the people he recruited to be a dancer in the Witches' Review was a young, sexy drifter named Susan Atkins. This was in 1967. And what Susan Atkins did in the Witches' Review is she emerged from a coffin, and she played the role of a vampire. You know, she wore fangs and such, and she would, dance erotically, and she had a big red fingernail on the end of her index finger, and she used to symbolically beckon for the blood of the, you know, trench coat wearing men who showed up for the Witches' Review. Now, she broke off from LaVey and hooked up with another Satanist named Charles Manson. And Susan Atkins became a household name in 1969 for stabbing the pregnant actress Sharon Tate to death and then licking the blood off of her fingers. And this was all at the orders of Charles Manson. Now, here's a very strange thing. Her act she did kind of presaged her later murderous activity. Her experiences with LaVey actually became real when she left. And that's a big problem I have with Satanism, is they introduce ideas which are ultimately destructive, and if they fall into the wrong hands, it quickly turns into murder. Now, I should also say that the Satanic Bible, there's no such thing as a Satanist after Anton LaVey. They are all Nazi Satanists, because Anton LaVey incorporated SS rituals into all of his stuff, and you can find this in his two books, The Satanic Bible and The Satanic Rituals, have SS rituals within them. So he was more of a Nazi Satanist, even though he had some Jewish blood. Another follower of LaVey in the early days of the Church of Satan was Bobby Beausoleil, who also broke off and joined Manson's crew, and he went to prison for murdering Gary Hinman to death.
And he was with part of the Manson group, wasn't he?
Right. He joined up with Manson along with Susan Atkins, and he was part of the family, and he murdered Gary Hinman off Manson's direct orders. So there you have two former early Church of Satan members who very quickly went off the wrong path. Now, it's very bizarre. Charles Manson himself was a Satanist. He identified himself with Satan several times. He also identified himself with Jesus Christ, as Crowley did. And Charles Manson took Scientology courses while he was in prison, which gave him some public speaking skills, which allowed him to con and exploit people who were from a higher socioeconomic class than he was, and that's how he really formed the family. So you find all these traces back to Crowley again.
Well, but actually, He really did seem to have some supernatural powers. I've forgotten which book it was. It may have been Susan Atkins' book, but talking about, you know, sitting on a bench or on a curb with Manson, and of course they don't have any money, and he says, well, now I'm going to concentrate here. The next man down the street is going to come and give us some money. And so he starts to concentrate. The fellow comes down the street and says, oh, let me give you a buck or two or something of the sort. Now, this doesn't just happen by accident. This man really did seem to have some supernatural powers.
It's interesting because during his trial, Vincent Bugliosi, who was the prosecuting attorney, said similar things. Vincent Bugliosi is convinced that Manson stopped his watch through psychic means in the court. And they actually wouldn't let Manson speak in his own behalf because Bugliosi feared he would use some sort of hypnotic or otherworldly power to sway the jury in his favor. So the courts even acknowledge what you're talking about.
And, of course, one thing we were talking about a little earlier was the relationship between Anton LaVey and Kenneth Anger. Now, those of you who have seen the book we carry, it's called Kinsey, Crime and Consequences. And there's a picture there of Alfred Kinsey at the shrine to Aleister Crowley in Sicily. And the man with him there at the shrine, it's a posed picture, is Kenneth Anger, the co-founder of the Church of Satan. Now, all of the evidence suggests that Kinsey, who changed the sexual mores of our society, funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, although they've done everything they could to actually suppress that information, including threatening a congressional committee with withdrawal of their funds if they did not, of course, keep the information about Rockefeller's association with Kinsey off the record. But, of course, here's Kinsey standing at the shrine to Aleister Crowley. And you can see in the background the shadow of a man who's hanging from the ceiling. Although you don't see the man, you just see the shadow. And there's Kenneth Anger, of course, the co-founder of the Church of Satan. So you begin to see how this all fits together. Because, of course, changing our sexual mores, changing the moral outlook of our society, the destruction of the Christian morality was really, of course, all based upon phony science, was the objective of the Luciferians.
Sure, I don't know too much about Kinsey's connection. There's a film coming out about him.
Well, of course, but it's all very much in praise of him. The fundamental work about him, really, you'll find in the book Kinsey, A Crime and Consequences by Judith Riesman, and, of course, the book They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, which goes into the background of the relationship between Kinsey and Aleister Crowley. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, just to pick up a bit, in the 1970s, Anton LaVey, in 1975, he was kind of a pimp. His daughter, Zena LaVey, has come out and said when he was short of money, he would actually start pimping women in San Francisco's red light district called the Tenderloin. So that was a big way Anton LaVey got his money.
No, he wasn't a very nice statement then, was he?
No, he tried to give himself, the impression that he was a great family man and such. It's all nonsense. He used to beat his wife cruelly, and they had to call the police because the Black Pope tried to strangle his wife to death one night. His two daughters wound up not speaking to him. He was just a miserable, miserable human being. Now, what happened is in 1975, he started to get greedy, and in his newsletter, The Cloven Hoof, he put in a new policy that if you wanted to get the higher degrees of the Church of Satan, you would have to pay him very high fees, in real estate, cash, or works of art. Now, what he had forgotten in his greed that he had taught all of these people not to be anyone's sucker and to just be out for themselves. So in 75, his core following of about 500 people, roughly, most of them broke off and started rival organizations, including Michael Aquino, who was his chief assistant for a while.
Now, that was Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, who was with the PsychOps section of the U.S. military.
In the Presidio.
Wasn't it? Right.
Right, just a few blocks down from where LaVey lived. Now, Michael Aquino is the polar opposite of LaVey. LaVey was a high school dropout and a street corner pimp. And Michael Aquino had a PhD from UC Santa Barbara in political science, and he was a very well-respected military PSYOP expert, as you said. He went off to form a separate organization, which he called the Temple of Set. Now, the temple, the name Set is just the Egyptian name for Satan. And he, much like Crowley, put an Egyptian flair, an Egyptian polish on his Satanism. Now, Michael Aquino is much more of a Nazi Satanist than even LaVey, because he went over to that Wellwisburg castle in Germany, which was Himmler's spot, and he did some rituals there, and he claimed to get an even deeper revelation from the Dark Prince, and he wrote this down in a book called The Wellwisburg Working, which is a chronicle of his flirtation with Nazi mysticism.
And really, everything in within Nazi Party was based upon mysticism, at least at the very upper echelon. So, and then here's Michael Aquino, a colonel, lieutenant colonel in the American military, tapping into these same occult forces that the Nazis were into.
Oh, definitely so. Eagerly, you know. And I don't understand it. A lot of Jewish people join his organization. I don't know how they could, considering what he thinks and believes. Now, what happened to Michael Aquino is in the mid-80s, he was hit with a whole series. He became embroiled in lawsuits, the first of which involved he was accused of child molestation at the Presidio base, but no charges were ever filed against him. I should point that out. There have been never been any criminal charges filed against Michael Aquino. A few years after that, a woman named Linda Blood wrote a book called The New Satanist, which she basically accused Aquino of the same sorts of things, of being involved in pedophilia. He sued her and got a large cash settlement, which has never been disclosed. So he does, in fact, he hasn't been charged with anything, Aquino, but he's certainly been on the fringe of a lot of very creepy things.
But, of course, you know, there it seems to be that there are people within the FBI who are there for one purpose, and that is to cover up Satanism. There's a wonderful book called Painted Black, written by a professor who studied these various satanic organizations in America and commented that the division of the FBI that investigates Satanism, their function is not to expose it, but to conceal it, and there always seems to be a hidden force protecting the Satanists here in this country.
It seems to be the case. It's very, very strange.
Well, I don't think it's strange at all, but go ahead.
Well, when you look at someone like... now, what happened to Aquino is he eventually just retired and turned over his operation to another fellow named Don Webb. As far as what you're talking about, the CIA being involved in Satanism, you need only look at those Iraq prison photos. Many of them, they forced the prisoners to get in different shapes and forms of the New World Order, like a pyramid, if you've noticed that in the photos. And the capstone of the pyramid is actually the U.S. soldier's head. So that's really the reason behind those photographs, is the Satanist faction of the intelligence agencies sending out messages, you know, that we're here, we're in power. I mean, some of these photos are unreal. Some of them I saw, they made the people get into a human swastika shape for people, for prisoners. And that's where you really see the CIA connection to this, is most of the pictures that came out of that prison, unbeknownst to most people, were actually occult symbols, you know, made with the flesh of human beings, which is a horrible, horrible thing.
Well, I think we're dealing with terrible evil, and this is what people don't understand. It did not end when, of course, they had their trials at Nuremberg. In fact, they were the cover so that the CIA and MI6 could help 10,000 Nazis escape to South America in the Rat Line. We even have a film with Sam Donaldson went down, traced these 10,000 Nazi war criminals, people like Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann and Mengele and Martin Bormann. 10,000 were helped to escape to South America. by the American CIA and British intelligence, and of course nothing was ever done to bring them to justice. The Jewish hunters, the Nazi hunters, actually tracked down Eichmann and Barbie and brought them back, but only 2 out of 10,000, the other 10,000, lived out their lives comfortably with the massive amounts of money that had been transferred there for them, continuing this worldwide Nazi movement, which did
die. Sure. Well, the process of denazification on the part of the U.S. government, what they basically say to people like Reinhold Gehlen is, you're not a Nazi anymore. You work for us.
We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Mr. William H. Kennedy. And we hope that many of our listeners in the Great Northwest will be leaving us. You can get the full two-hour program, if you'd like, by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. But it's important that you understand the continuity of evil. You can't understand anything going on in the world today unless you understand the dark forces that permeate every aspect of once Christian America. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy, and of course he's been talking about Michael Aquino, and Colonel Aquino then retired from the military. Apparently then he transferred control of the Temple of Set to who?
A fellow named Don Webb, who is running it now.
All right, so it's still alive and well. I suppose they have a website. Most of these organizations have websites. In fact, there are literally thousands of Luciferian and satanic websites up there, and the average American has no idea that they even exist.
Well, the rise of the Internet really gave a big boost to international Satanism, which is one thing I'm going to bring out in my book.
Now, there are over 3.5 million references to the Process Church of the Final Judgment, and yet I dare say there's probably not one in 1,000 Americans who's ever heard of the Process Church, and yet it's been involved in some of the most amazing murder stories and in our country today.
The Process Church was started in the early 1960s by two ex-Scientologists named Robert Moore de Grimston and Mary Ann de Grimston. They were with the Church of Scientology, and then they broke off and started the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which was a Satan-worshipping church. They worshipped Jesus and Satan as different aspects of the same God.
Almost like Zoroastrianism.
Right, but they were a little more than that, because they thought Jesus, Satan, was just a title of Jesus. So they had a very bizarre theology. Now, what happened to them is they spread out, they recruited a lot of rich people with the Grimstons, and they spread out all over Europe and the United States and spread the Process Church of the Final Judgment teaching. They went out to San Francisco, and they lived a few houses down from there again, Charles Manson, who wrote an article for the Process Journal. He wrote one article. He was very similar to the Process Church people, because he identified himself as both Jesus and Satan. And the Process Church of the Final Judgment went on for many years. As I say, they were very well funded, and they wound up falling apart in 1975 when Robert Moore and Mary Ann de Grimston started to have personal sexual problems, and they disbanded the church and destroyed all of its records.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, William H. Kennedy. But, of course, this is the time we're going to have to wrap this hour's program up and say goodnight to our listeners up in the Great Northwest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to mention that Radio Liberty really is listener-supported. We're primarily dependent upon those of you who listen to our program for your support, so we can continue doing what we do 5 hours a day, 5 hours a day. We're on radio someplace in the United States, 5 hours a day on the Internet, and you can hear our early morning or afternoon programs on different networks. You can hear 3 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com or listen to our archive programs there. We are 4 hours a day on shortwave, 5 hours a day on satellite. But it's an expensive proposition, and if you believe this information is important for the very survival of our country, why we hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, there's a new movie out. It's called National Treasure, and it tells you all about the occult foundation of the United States. It tells you about the Masons, tells you about how good that they are, about the occult emblem on the back of the dollar bill. But what the average American doesn't understand is there have always been two forces in this country. One was the Christian, starting with the Pilgrims and with the various groups that came here, the Quakers and the Congregationalists, and then of course the groups that were in the southern part of the United States that were carried over from French Protestants, and then eventually the Catholics came. But America was always basically a Christian nation. But then there were always the occult forces here as well. And you can only really understand that if you read my October newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of the October newsletter, we will actually quote there extensively from the Satanists who talk about the satanic group that was brought here in 1640, sent over from England by a man named Sir Francis Bacon, who was one of the leaders of the world occult movement during the 17th century. So if you'd like to get a free copy of our October newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. We hope that maybe you will want to get information so you can really understand the true nature of the spiritual battle that is going on in America and throughout the world today. At one time, America was primarily a Christian nation, and everybody knew it. Today, America is no longer a Christian nation. We live in a post-Christian nation because the forces of darkness that came here in 1640 are now in the predominance in both of our political parties. And until the American people understand the brotherhood of darkness, they cannot understand why this country is doing what it's doing. And I believe, of course, behind all of the plans of the dark forces is God's plan that's going to bring his judgment on this nation unless there is a massive revival. And at the present time, I don't see it, but we have to keep working for it and praying for it because that's all we can do. But if you would like to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, it was the best single introduction to this whole story that I've been telling and that we tell repeatedly in one form or another on our programs 5 hours a day. Brotherhood of Darkness is available through Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can get the book, or you can get the video, or you can get the audio tape, or you can get all three together at the Brotherhood of Darkness special. And we want you, of course, to copy the video if you get it, or the audio tape, and get other people to listen. Because unless you understand, the battle is not between Republicans and Democrats, but between right and left, between conservative and liberals. That's what the dialectic is. You create two forces, and you create both of them, and you have them arguing back and forth as the thesis, the antithesis, and then the new synthesis described by Hegel, and that's what it's really all about. And the people don't understand, you always create a counterforce to your own organization so that, of course, people will not understand what's really going on behind the scenes. And until we understand the true nature of this battle, why we will continue losing. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, www.radioliberty.com. And remember, you can go to Mr. Kennedy's website at www.williamhkennedy.com. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be with you again next Monday.